Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Phone Ron Applesauce's minor league podcast. We got the full crew here today. My name's Lucas. I'm joined by Steve, Ken, and Thomas. How is everyone doing?
Wow. Good. The squad is here.
Steve, what has conspired to let you join us on a weekend this time?
I called in sick from work, which is legit. I am kind of sick. Mm-hmm. I could have gone to work, but it's one of those things, like, I just want the day off to rest and recuperate and such.
Mm-hmm. It was sick, parentheses, missing the podcast. Close
right. The Mets put me on the DL with that phantom injury, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, the Mets don't do that. Well, I guess they do now. A couple of years ago, you would have just had to tough it out and sit there for 10 days while the team played a man short. So, on the other hand, now someone's going to be blackballed from the league to send a message to stop manipulating the injured list. So it's great to have everyone back in here. I did not come up with a more clever promote extend trade than what I had already come up with last week. So as we discussed last week, I made my way back to the gym. I did a leg day and I wanted to die. I didn't do legs today. Today we did a lot of upper body stuff and I again want to die. So though at least I can walk around while dying this time. So for this week's promote extend trade, we'll just do your favorite and least favorite upper body exercises. And we can keep it again pretty straightforward here. Let's do bench press, tricep pull downs, and bicep curls. Go.
Oh, pull downs are definitely one. The other two, I don't care either way.
You enjoy pull downs.
They're more fun than anything else.
Yeah. Pull downs are good. I have never been able to bench my weight, which is depressing.
Benching's hard.
I used to be able to squat like almost 2.5 times my weight, and now I can't do that. And I've never been able to bench my weight, which is just embarrassing given that I played lacrosse.
At least you don't have to throw the ball. You just have the stick.
Yeah. But I did go to like a travel team tryout once and they actually had bench. They had a bench set up for people to like demonstrate that they could lift. I'm like, I can't lift that much. So that was just awesome. The great feeling there.
Yeah. That must've been a lovely feeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The bench pressing is getting traded because just too intimidating.
The thing that sucks about benching is that if you don't have a friend to go to the gym with, you got to ask some stranger to spot you, which is never like, I'm too socially awkward for that.
Mm-hmm. And who wants to be like, yo, dude, can you spot me? I need to lift 50 pounds.
I'm taking doing just shit off of it. He's taking weights off of it. Hey, man, can you spot me real quick?
I'm doing just the bar and I need some help, please.
We don't need that kind of negativity, you know.
Ken, where are you at on the... I believe we established last week that you were the only one of us with any upper body strength. So is this more in your wheelhouse then?
A little more. Bicep curls are probably my strongest exercise. Uh-huh. So I'm probably going to extend those. So the pull down was one. I do enjoy the pull down. What was the third?
Bench.
Benching.
I fucking hate benching. So yeah.
No, we're down. All on the same page here.
Because that's bench. Like an actual technique you have to like know how to do if you want to do it right. Like it's a little harder than the rest of them. Obviously, you need to know what you're doing at the gym regardless. But
I will admit, and I would have hated this in my youth. But I used to hate the like rack setups where the bar is kind of on a slide. Now that I am a little bit older and completely out of practice and extremely weak, my building's gym has a rack, but that's on the slide and it makes things slightly less intimidating, I'll admit.
Yeah, that's fair.
It also, of course, makes things easier, but I don't want to admit that to myself. I'm totally doing all this weight in a legit manner. Okay, so that again concludes the exercise portion of the pod. We will get back to you again on our protein powder recommendations. If there are any sponsors out there who want to hit us up, you know how to contact us. And if you don't, we'll tell you at the end of the show. So it's great that all of us are here because it's that time of year where we start doing our draft follows. We've had pretty decent success with this over the years. I think last year was the first time in, what, 3 or 4 seasons we hadn't actually predicted the Mets' first round pick, and it was largely because they were picking at 32. Am I correct on that we had nailed it several years running there?
Yeah, I think at least one of us did.
Like Beatty, I think I had Jet. I think we had the guy before Beatty as well.
I had Pete Crow Armstrong. I remember that.
PCA. Yep.
Nice. So, unfortunately, the Mets are picking at 19 this year because they dropped 10 spots. I think we can nail 19. Nailing 32 very hard. I think we could hit 19 here. I have faith in us. So I'll ask you guys who wants to go first. We're each gonna do we'll try to each do two and track them throughout the year so much as stats are available. I may have screwed myself on that front. We'll talk about that in a minute. But who wants to go first and throw out their first draft follow here?
I could go.
Go for it.
Things a little easier. So I have a pitcher and a hitter. I didn't do that on purpose. That's just kind of what happened. And I have one prep guy and one college guy. Also didn't do that on purpose. It just kind of happened. Mm-hmm. But I'll do the pitcher first because I find him super interesting. Cam Caminiti. I wonder if anyone recognizes the last name because that is, I think they're cousins, him and Ken Caminiti, because his dad is Ken's cousin or was Ken's cousin because Ken passed away.
They're really not very imaginative with names in this family.
Yes, not Cam and Kent, not very, very close together, but they're cousins, right? That makes them cousins.
Sure.
I think so. Whatever. But they're related. But he's going to be one of the youngest players in the class. He's only 17 now because he reclassified from next year to this year. So that's an interesting thing. And he's a left-handed pitcher who's obviously currently in high school. He has a commitment to LSU, which is like obviously LSU is very good. So that could definitely have him be around at 19 because it's not a commitment to a bad school where you don't want to go. Like people probably want to go to LSU. Right now, he's a two-way player. I don't think that he's going to be. I think he's going to be a pitcher because he is a left-handed pitcher who's 6'2 at 17 years old, who throws like mid-90s and has touched like 98. He also has two breaking pitches that he uses. I think it's a curveball and a slider. They're not very hard, but to have three pitches, and he also dabbles with the changeup. So to have four pitches that he knows how to throw and three pitches that he knows how to throw comfortably at 17, I know this is very old of me, but I like when pitchers throw more than two pitches, especially starters. Like I would prefer them have a deeper arsenal. I know that's not exactly conventional thinking, but I just I like it a little more instead of when a guy is just fastball slider for 5 innings.
Thomas hates Spencer Strider.
No, it just makes me a little nervous. Mm-hmm. But obviously that like guys like that have worked for years. Like even going back to like Frankie Montes when he was good was really a two pitch guy, and he was great for years before his shoulder got destroyed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, four pitches. He already throws to the mid 90s kind of regularly and has touch high 90s at 17. And that's just the type of arm that the Mets don't have in the system, really. Like, Christian Scott could do that, but to have that at that young is very interesting to me when the pitching dev has gotten so much better over the years, since Yeagers came around. So and the age also, him being only 17, is really interesting. Like, he's so young that the combination of all those things makes him really interesting to me. And the other one is Kalen Culpepper. He was listed as a third baseman. He goes to Kansas State now, but he's been playing shortstop for them and looks pretty good. Like he's a good third baseman. So moving to shortstop in college makes sense, but I like that he has some defensive flexibility. I like his swing. I think he has good bat speed. I think he has good pop. He hits the ball pretty hard. It's just, I think his issues are swing decision based and like, he'll chase a little too much and swing at bad pitches sometimes, and that's just not great. But also, you could coach that out when you get to the. Obviously, the Mets haven't done that before. Like we talk about Mauricio all the time and stuff. But he's an interesting guy because it's pop and it's good bat speed and good athleticism, and he could play third and is shifting the short. So the Mets can kind of do multiple things with him in the infield. if that's the case, since he's known, he's prone, he's shown an ability to move positions and not have it affect his game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I just find both of those guys interesting. And I think because of the commitment, and I think because of like how there's other hitters at the top of this class in college, that I think both of them could be there at 19.
Yeah, Caminiti, it's got to be real tempting for a high school pitcher to go to LSU at this point, because, I mean, they hired away a real major league pitching coach from the Twins, who are, you know, not the elite tier of pitching organizations, but right below that. And after, you know, watching the success they just had with Paul Skeens, you got to think a lot of these preps are totally happy to get on campus there. So I wonder how feasible it is for the Mets to take him at 19 and pay the necessary bonus, given that they don't have a ton of extra picks this year.
Right? Yeah, I wonder that too. But I think I also just wanted to track him, really, because mm-hmm. I find him super interesting. The fact that he has this level of stuff in high school, like let me find the tweet, because I was looking at it before, but he like his last start was 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. He threw 16 strikeouts, was a no hitter. He had an immaculate inning, he had a 4 strikeout inning, and they won 10-0. Like, like he's doing like laughably funny shit in high school, because he's throwing 95 from the left side, and like some kids are never gonna play baseball after their high school career is over. You know, like
some kid's gonna walk off the field after that game and just quit on the spot. Like I don't need this in my life anymore. I don't want to do this. That must be brutal. Certainly would be. I'm trying to think of that'd be the most exciting pitching prospect at draft time since Allen. Arguably, I mean, let's not count about Allen. Yeah.
We were pumped about Allen and Rocker, but Rocker never signed, and Allen his arm went out, very sad. But
yeah.
Like the Allen pick was genuinely exciting.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, just from the Ross, I mean, the Mets have done a great job, as to what you alluded to with Scott. They've been, you know, making something not out of nothing, but out of, you know, lower value picks. Be interesting to see what they could do with this sort of tools, and maybe that turns into something more special. So I'd be on board with that. Let's see how that plays out. How do you feel about Culpepper's defense at short? Do you think he's actually going to be able to stick there, or is this just a college thing?
It seems like this is a thing that they're doing because they have to at college, but mm-hmm. I think he's okay enough where it makes me feel good about his third base defense going forward. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of those things where, yes, it's a college thing, but even a college team wouldn't put a terrible shortstop defender out there. Mm-hmm. If they would just play someone else. Mm-hmm. Like he's made some nice plays. I've seen them. I don't think he's a shortstop. I think he's probably a third baseman, but I don't think that's necessarily a problem. And I think that with the Mets having a Lindor in the fold for so long, I think that I don't really mind if they start doing stuff like that, where they're moving guys a little, like Jett's going to play shortstop and Acuña's going to play shortstop, going back to guys who are in the org, but like they're not going to play shortstop for the Mets unless something goes terribly wrong with Lindor, which I don't think any of us does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So even if he's not as great at shortstop, and that does keep his draft value down, I think at 19 with the bat speed and the athleticism and everything else, and the fact that he is a good third baseman, mm-hmm. I think I'm fine with him where they would take him as of right now. Things change, obviously.
Okay. And just for context for everyone, from Baseball America's most recent draft list, now keep in mind this list is a month old. I think this was published right before the college season started, so things have already shifted pretty drastically in some areas. But Caminiti is 17th and Culpepper 23rd. So right in the range the Mets are picking there at 19. Okay, great. Anyone want to go next?
I'll go next because the two guys that I picked are literally the same exact people, basically, that Thomas just... Okay,
perfect.
So the first guy I'd want to see would be Noah Franco, who is an infielder/left-handed pitcher from the IMG Academy, which is in Bradenton, Florida. And they're well-known, you know, high school baseball powerhouse kind of place. So BA has him at 26. MLB has him at 23. Fangraphs has him at 13. That was based on the preseason. I didn't realize that Baseball America did a update recently, so he might have changed.
Oh, they haven't. They haven't. Yeah, that was my point. They haven't updated this since the preseason.
Like December or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Franco's also going to be one of the younger players in the draft class. He also reclassified from the 2025 draft. He's just going to be barely 18 when the draft happens. And last year, he hit 320, 469, 680, 23 games with three doubles, three triples, three home runs, six stolen bases, and he had a 162 ERA in 30.1 innings.
That's crazy.
This season, obviously, just started. He just played in eight games, but so far he's hitting 407, 467, 481 with just two doubles, no other extra base hits. But he has a perfect zero ERA on the mound in 13.1 innings with five hits allowed, six walks, and 27 strikeouts. So definitely like to see 27 strikeouts in 13.1 innings. As a hitter, you know, he's a quick, smooth swing, good bat-to-ball skills, good sense of the strike zone. The power numbers aren't really there yet. You know, nothing really jumps off the page at you. But he's 6'3", he's 190 pounds. He's slim and athletic looking, so you could totally see him, you know, bulking up in the future and adding to the power along with that hit tool. He's athletic. He's, you know, speedy enough in the outfield. Obviously, he has a good arm, so right field is probably the best fit for him. As a pitcher now, he sits in the low 90s from the left side. He touches like 93, 94. Not as impressive as Caminiti, but hey, you know. And he also has a pretty good low 80s slider and a pretty good feel for a low 80s changeup also. So like Thomas was saying, it's nice to see when a young pitcher has a feel for more than just, you know, fastball, curveball, or fastball slider, whatever. It's nice when that young pitcher has more than just kind of an idea about a changeup. It's nice when he can actually, you know, use it. He has a commitment to Texas Christian University. You know, they're a decent team. They've had some success over the last couple of years, but I don't think that's a commitment that's going to be unbreakable. I was looking over some names. The last big name I found that had a commitment to TCU was Quinn Priester, and he signed with the Pirates when they took him 18 overall, and they basically gave him slot money, which was $3.5 million that year. So I think that Franco would be signable, definitely. He's an interesting player. You know, the Mets have drafted a lot of high school players over the last couple of years, so I wouldn't be upset with Franco.
Do you want him more as a hitter or as a pitcher, do you think?
I think that there's more upside to him as a hitter, but, you know, the Mets drafted Nolan McLean last year, and they're letting him develop as both, so...
That's true.
Why not?
I forgot about that, to be honest.
Well, that actually pivots nicely to my next question. You gave us his strikeout numbers on the mound. Do you have his strikeout numbers in the box? Because that, I feel like, is the big hole usually for these two-way guys, including McLean, who like literally can't make contact. It's like, what's Franco's hit tool look like there?
If you give me 1 second, I could look it up, because unlike certain other high school players, the IMG Academy actually updates their stats.
I would hope that the IMG Academy is updating their stats, given that this is the only reason it exists.
Yeah. So eight games. And this year, he has two walks to five strikeouts in eight games. Last year, he had... What was last year? This is last year. Last year, he had in... 21 games? 23 games, excuse me. He had 11... walks to 10 strikeouts.
Okay.
So
there's some plate discipline and actual hitting ability here. It's not just, you know, raw athleticism and power that's totally unrefined. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to talk about raw power, unrefined. That gets my second guy.
Oh boy.
Dakota Jordan.
Oh buddy. Okay.
He's an outfielder at Mississippi State. Baseball America has him 44, MLB has him 27, and Fangraphs kept crashing when I was trying to find him on the rankings. He wasn't in the
That's
top.
That's a good omen.
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't get, you know how you can adjust the filter, yeah, 30 yeah. players, 50. It just
clearly,
wasn't going.
Clearly you just didn't X out of enough of the ads that just litter. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's a draft eligible sophomore this year. He hit 307, 397, 575 in 44 games last year with 9 doubles, 1 triple, 10 homers, 6 stolen bases, and 25 walks to 46 strikeouts. He hit well over the Cape over the summer. And then this year, through 15 games so far, he's hitting 411, 529, 911 with 7
Never
doubles. 7 doubles. 7 home runs and 13 walks to 20 strikeouts. So obviously
there it is.
The power immediately pops out at you. Jordan has crazy power. He's listed at 6 foot even, 220 pounds. It's weird. He looks bigger than that and smaller than that at the same time. Like when he's coming up to the plate or he's just standing outfield, he just kind of looks like a normal dude. Mm-hmm. But then like when he's at the plate and he's swinging, it's like he just grows to like this giant dude, and when he swings it's just like bam, like the ball just goes. He's got easy plus bat speed. He swings with a lot of loft. He's a solid, strong looking kid. He just destroys the ball. Last year he had a 112.6 mile per hour 90th percentile exit velo. For a major leaguer, that's solid. Maybe even a little bit more than solid. And then for a college player, that's like insane elite. The drawback, though, is, yeah, the strikeouts. He destroyed fastballs, but he struggled breaking balls. He had a 25% strikeout rate last year, not optimal. And this year, so far, in limited games, it's up to 28%. He does walk to augment those strikeouts. He had a 14% walk rate last year, 19% this year. And he has been able to maintain a 300-plus average in about 60 games in the SEC, which is nice. But, you know, it is only going to get harder from here. And we have talked about, you know, as Thomas said, the Mets system hasn't really been able to help Ronnie Mauricio with his pitch discipline and everything. So I don't know if the Mets are a team that could help Jordan with his breaking ball issues. But, you know, there is a brand-new coaching staff coming in. So, you know, hey, who knows? Let's be optimistic here.
Yeah, that's a brand for us.
Yeah, and then as a fielder, he's, you know, solid outfielder. He's played all three positions. Still needs some time to kind of learn how to use his speed. He's athletic and he is speedy, but, you know, he was a football player. So it's like, how would you say it? Just running fast in a straight line. You know, he needs to learn to get better routes in the outfield and zigzag, you know, needs to learn how to read the ball better, learn how to read pitchers to be like a more pesky base stealer. But that all comes with reps and games under his belt and everything. But he definitely has the athleticism to be a positive, net positive outfielder, probably left or right.
This sounds a lot like a more athletic version of the guy the Marlins took, I believe, in the third round last year, and Kemp Alderman. Just stupid college power with a lot of strikeouts. Which, you know, could be really good, really fun, big upside swing, but you know, a lot of risk there as well. I mean, this is one of those picks that if it hits, if he has a big season, he could definitely rock it up the board a bit as we get closer to draft time. We've gone through two sets of guys. I'll hop over to mine now. So I, like Thomas, also have both a hitter and a pitcher and a prep and a college guy. I'll start with the college pitcher. That is Michael Massey, right-hand pitcher out of Wake Forest. So far this year, in three games. He has of a 0.71 ERA, a 0.563 WHIP, 15.6 strikeouts per nine, and 2.1 walks per nine. That's a 7.3 strikeout to walk ratio. That'll play for sure. Now, you might be wondering why someone with the stuff to post that stupid of a stat line through three games is at all in contention for a pick in the late teens. And that's because Massey has not started prior to this season. He's been out of the bullpen for first Tulane and then Wake Forest last year. Now, Wake is almost certainly the best team in the country this year. They also have like a professional grade pitching lab. And Massey seems to be the latest product of that. He's got an absolutely disgusting fastball. It is far and away the best fastball in college baseball. He's got more than 20 inches of induced vertical break. He throws it extremely hard. Batters cannot square it up. It is probably the best college fastball we've seen in the last 2 to 3 seasons, I would think. It's certainly better than Paul Skeens. It's probably better than Ty Floyd's as well. He's got good secondaries as well. The only question here is, can he stick in the rotation? And frankly, I think that's a risk I'm willing to take with modern pitching usage, right? If he's not someone long term who can throw 180, 200 innings, but if he's a 3-inning fireman or a 5-and-dive reliever or a 5-and-dive pitcher who's just absolutely disgusting for those 5 innings, that's a really valuable piece that a lot of smart teams would leverage in modern baseball. There's also a very good chance that he develops enough this year to actually profile as a starter long term. Like I said, Wake is almost certainly the best pitching development pitching development school in college baseball at this point. Any gains he picks up there are going to be to whichever team winds up drafting him's benefit. So I think there's a real chance, given how hot he's come out of the gate here, that he's gone by 19. There are a number of pitchers who have been off to fast starts. Chase Burns, Jack Caglione, the lefty whose name Hagen Smith. There are a number of pitchers who are off to stupendous starts, and maybe that hides Massey a little bit. That's really my hope, because if he's there at 19, that's a pick I would sprint in if I'm running the Mets draft room.
Do you think Massey is lower down because he like? Do you think it'll be harder for him to rise because the other pitchers have also started for 2 or 3 years or whatever, and he still would only have 1 year of starting?
I think that's probably what would keep him suppressed on the board. And to be fair, like, a lot of the pitchers above him are really excellent as well.
Yeah, like, this is also a good Chase Burns is going to go 101, you know what I mean? Or probably should go 101. Like, you know what I mean? It's a really good pitching class, so.
I might like Hagen Smith even more than Burns. Hagen Smith is someone who I originally was looking at for this exercise, like, early on, and because BA had him.
He's going to be gone.
Yeah, after the first couple weeks he's had, there's no chance he's getting past like 10. So, assuming that those guys are off the board, and I'm not a big Caglione guy, even though he's, or however you pronounce his name, I would also rather not take a guy like Jonathan Santucci, especially because he goes to Duke. Massey is just far and away the most interesting and possibly feasible college arm that's available to the Mets. He also falls into a class of pitcher I like a lot and potentially overvalue. I think I've bitched a couple times about the Mets not taking Ty Floyd last year. I just love guys with elite fastballs. Damn the other questions. Floyd might not have any other secondaries. Massey might not be able to actually start. I really don't care. When your fastball is this good, I will roll the dice on that, because it's almost the opposite of what you were talking about with Caminiti, Thomas. Screw the balanced arsenal. If you have one pitch that's a clear 70 and might even be better, I will go that direction.
That's Christian Scott, right? Like, his other stuff is good, but his fastball is like his moneymaker. And it's elevated him as a prospect this much that his fastball is just nasty.
yep. And to the Mets' credit, they fixed his shit fastball. Massey would be coming in with like the perfect modern fastball. So would really love for the Mets.
This is also a guy who you draft and then like in a year and a half is in the majors. Like, oh, yes. Because he's older and like he's stretching out now. So, I mean, I'd be all in on that. But because when you put him in our Slack channel, I was like, ooh, that's an interesting one.
I'm trying to figure out. So BA had him in their February update. He was 34th. There's no way he's getting down to 34 at this point. But if there's enough to hold him back at 19, I'd be very excited about that selection. Okay, second guy. I originally had a college outfielder here, and then I thought it'd be a little bit more interesting to try to find a high school guy. So the name I came up with here was Slade Caldwell. He is currently ranked 39th on Baseball America's board. He is a bit higher on Fangraphs. I believe he's actually slotted at 19th, which I had not seen before. Caldwell goes to Valley View High School in Jonesboro, Arkansas. He has a commitment to Ole Miss. And this is where I would tell you about his stats from the last couple years as part of the varsity baseball team, except for the fact that Valley View doesn't seem to post their varsity baseball stats. And all I can tell you is that he's a kind of middling running back for their football team. And that's very clearly not where his future is. So I'll skipping past the stats. I'll just tell you about the profile. Caldwell's a shorter guy, 5'9". But with really good plate discipline, wrings a lot of strength out of that small frame, potential plus defender in center field, does not have the arm for right field if he can't play center, which is a downside. The defensive projection concerns me slightly. But you can probably imagine why this is a profile. Like we've talked about liking short guys and thinking they're undervalued. I'm a sucker for plate discipline. That's nothing new. I also, like, from what I've a couple of things I've read, he plays the game in an extremely intense manner, and all of this is lining up to give me extreme Drew Gilbert vibes. Drafting Drew Gilbert out of high school would have been a nice move. So that's basically where I'm at with this. Has a strong track record of performing on the showcase circuit. Things to watch this year, just what's the power look like? Is the play discipline actually real? Going to have to do some legwork to track down evidence to support any of this if the high school stats aren't posted, but I'll do my best there, and I think this is a name to keep an eye on as we move towards draft time.
He is 5'8", so he's basically a bigger version of Jim Williams.
Yeah, isn't Gilbert's like 5'9"?
He's not that tall either.
Yeah, so these look, if the future short king outfield of Jet, Gilbert, and Caldwell, I'll assign me the hell up for that.
Hell yeah.
Though Brandon Nimmo will probably still be out in center field, or not center field, left field for a good long while, and he's Brandon Nimmo 6'3"? Really?
Well, he's a big boy.
I didn't realize Nimmo was that big.
That was the whole thing on him out of high school, was that he was a big boy, lots of projection.
The biggest thing I remember out of
my Wyoming boy.
Yeah, yeah. A Wyoming boy who didn't have a high school baseball team and, you know, we're bitching about high school stats not being posted. Nimmo literally didn't have high school stats to post. So go learn how to hit in a barn.
It's actually kind of a wild career. Like,
oh,
when you think
yeah,
about
absolutely.
Him making as much money and being as good as he is when he literally couldn't play high school baseball because it didn't exist. Like, that's kind of nuts.
Nimmo's tracking to like be very firmly in that hall of very good or hall of like low end hall of very good guy.
I mean, dude's gonna get his number retired by the Mets probably.
He should. He's gonna make almost $200 million in his career as well, and you know, not actually a relevant comp here at all. I don't know how we wound up on this. But yeah, I mean, we take outfielders of all shapes and sizes here. And if Caldwell is being pushed down the board because he's a bit shorter, the Mets should do the same thing they did with Jet Williams and say, screw it, we're doing it. We're taking him anyway.
The market inefficiency is short kings.
Yeah.
And the Mets are collecting them like
absolutely
like stones.
to be working out so far. So
I'm trying to think who are the other short guys they could be going after here. I'm really not coming up with it. I mean, Tamar Johnson's pretty short. Can we get the Pirates on the phone? I mean, they're dumb. They might trade him away for something stupid. Tyler Black's a shorter guy for the Brewers. I'd love to have Tyler Black on the Mets. That'd be a load of fun. Only guys 5'10 and shorter allowed on the Mets. No, even better. All hitters 5'10 or shorter. All pitchers 6'6 or taller. That's build true. The best team possible.
We need to have the tall pitchers.
All right. Well, that leaves Ken. Who you got for us, Ken?
So this year, I like Drew Beam, a right-handed pitcher out of Tennessee. I think we talked about it a little bit with Jaden Hill a couple years ago. The primary thing I like about Beam is he has a changeup that's by far his best pitch. Mm-hmm. The thing I like about the changeup being well-developed is I think it's easier to teach him a usable breaking ball. He throws a combination curveball-slider thing that, you know, can flash. Plus, I think it's easier to get big stuff jumps out of a breaking ball than it is a changeup. More of a feel pitch, the changeup, versus a grip pitch, a slider. He also throws very hard, mid-90s. And the knock on him, or why he might be available in the later first round, despite being a relatively heralded college starter, is he hasn't missed like a ton of bats in college. I think his highest strikeout per nine is a little over 9. So, you know, a lot of the guys towards the higher part of the draft board, you know, might 11, 12, 13 strikeouts per nine. That being said, he's a guy who I think has a fairly safe floor, which is good in the late half of the first round. And I think given the Mets' recent ability to develop pitching a little better than in recent memory, he's a guy I could see making some stuff jumps once he gets into, affiliated ball.
I think that last point you make is very relevant because Tennessee has not had a great track record recently.
But we've gone to that well before.
Yeah. I mean, Chase Burns was at Tennessee for before he transferred to
the league. Oh my God.
Yeah. So I could buy that there's I'm not going to say they're as bad as Miami or Virginia not optimizing guys, but if your contention is that, you know, there's something to squeeze out of him that the Mets could do, that I'd buy that, yeah.
The other thing I like about him, control has been a strong suit of his. Last year, he struck out about 3 times more hitters than he walked. And no, 2 years ago, 3 times as many hitters as he walked, almost 4 times last year. And This year so far, he's at 20 strikeouts to 2 walks. So, the old adage of it's difficult to teach command. That's another thing going for him that I particularly like in a college pitcher. It's nice when they can, limit the walks right out of the gate. So also a little different from the last guy we got from Tennessee. my
a lot of blade slander here.
A lot of blade slander. He's going to be a good reliever someday. Moving on. Carson Benj is my other one. He is a right fielder / starting pitcher from Oklahoma State. And the primary reason I like him is his offensive game is already, decently well-rounded. And he's split time between the two positions to this point, the two skill sets. I like him more as a hitter, and I think the more that he focuses on solely hitting, the better he'll end up being. In his freshman season, he hit .345, .468, .538 in almost 250 plate appearances. He walked more than he struck out. And so far this year, he's hitting 356, 466, 593. And he's also walked more than he struck out. So he's already a relatively polished hitter with regards to plate discipline. Some of that's probably he's getting pitched around, but he, you know, hasn't been expanding the zone in the ways that a lot of guys do. And I would expect some of the other aspects to maybe play up a little bit more once he focuses solely on hitting. Assuming he focuses solely on hitting, that's what I would do. So.
Yeah, again, I'd like something else we've talked about repeatedly, like finding these areas of sub-optimization and guys who haven't committed one way or the other seems like a good thing to bet on. So I buy that pitch as well, honestly.
Yeah, in theory, there might be a little bit more room to unlock there. It doesn't always work out that way, but... and I'm not sure if there's any like science behind it, just, you know, anecdotal sort of stuff, but, that's kind of why he's interesting to me and I'm looking forward to following him.
Looking forward to us getting, one of these dudes drafted at 19 this year to get back on the horse of predicting the Mets first round pick successfully. I do like that I don't think we've picked anyone who is consistently projected above 19 now, so only upside, basically, to see any of these guys go with the Mets, right? They'd be rising up the board pretty significantly to be a real selection at 19. So that makes things a little bit more fun as opposed to picking someone who's projected 12 and hoping for a fall, I think.
Yeah. I didn't want to do that because I feel like then we're just talking about some guy who's going to go third. And I'm like, well, that's not happening this year. So.
Cool. Okay. So those are the draft falls for this year. We'll be keeping up with them for the next. What is the draft? July, right?
July.
So next 4 months or so. We'll also touch on all the minor leaguers performing in camp over the next couple weeks as we inch towards the start of the season. Thank God the season's almost upon us. It's been too long. In the meantime, you can continue to check out all episodes on the Home Run Applesauce Network, either through Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. You can visit us on Patreon for bonus episodes and to help directly support the podcasters in the network. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Sipa. I am at ElVajos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSCN. I will also add in at the end here, Happy St. Patrick's Day to all who are celebrating. I wish I had some corned beef, but alas, I do not. until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.